Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Ruck, the rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times, brought to you specially late in the week this week following yesterday's Lions announcement, the squad of 41 announced yesterday, and today the England announcement of a squad of 31 to go on the Argentina tour in June. There is so much to discuss that we've levelled down our discussees down to the two of us, just myself and Steve Jones, who has been on the podcast throughout its run. There were 41 Lions named yesterday. Yes, 41, second biggest Lions squad of all time. Neither Steve nor myself made it on, but we were pretty close. We're going to New Zealand anyway, so we might come on as reserves when the injuries start kicking in. Steve, what a day yesterday. We've had all the sort of theatricality and drama that we've become accustomed to with these things. I went away with a real spring in my step. I guess it was just the start of the journey, the day when it kicks off, when the speculation's over, and you think, however you package it up, I went away thinking, well, yeah, there is a chance. What about yourself?
No, I went away with a spring in my step because, really, I mean, when the Lions start, and yesterday the announcement was the start of the whole process, the actual playing process. It was, first of all, what a pleasure it was to get away from the interminable commercial announcements and all that stuff that surrounds it, which I don't think they need, to actually have some live players and to know who the captain will be. It was great. I keep on running into this mental block that we're in, and that is that, you know, they arrive in New Zealand and tired and exhausted, jet lagged on a Wednesday, and they play on Saturday. And I cannot get the spring in my step to take me around that.
Well, that is what we're left with. When I was talking to Warren Gatland after the official announcement, it was all full of. He was full of. This is the strongest Lions squad I've been a part of. It's been three. Graham Rowntree, I've hardly ever heard him so effusive. He was talking about the genius, and he's never had talent like that to work with. So uplifting. But no one's actually kidding us here. Pretty much the last thing Warren said to us was, so yeah, the Lions camp starts in mid-May, and out of our squad of 41, we think we might get 12 of them there. Yeah. I mean, it's preposterous. This is the Lions, and 12 people start training.
They do, and it's almost like when you're starting a new team, you get 12 people training. When you're starting a new team, or it's pouring with rain, or six people have flounced off, sort of thing, and, you know, there's not pretend you can do anything with 12. You can do their fitness stuff and get that up a little bit, but you can't do anything with 12 people. And, you know, whenever more people come along, you've got to explain to the people who come along what the 12 have done. So it's interminable. It's token.
I wonder even what the point of doing that first week with 12 is. I mean, you know, maybe wait to the second week when a few more teams have been knocked out of their club competitions, and you can at least get over 15, find some opposition, work on something proper. I mean,
exactly.
What are they going to do together?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
they're not even going to have enough people to form one of those groups to get across a river together, are they? That's what they do, isn't it?
You build these piles, and then it apparently affects teams. It helps teams break. So
well, they build pyramids, don't they? They stand on each other's shoulder.
Yeah. They might as well go to a pub, actually, because even if you get 15, there'll probably be 14 forwards and one back or something. something like that. And, you know, the only thing that's going to stop that is if some big team, Munster or Leinster or, say, Wasps or Saracens, get kicked out and then their players become available. So it's no way to run a railway. It's absolutely ridiculous when you think of it.
Whatever we say today, that is the backdrop. That is the foreground and the background that shapes the whole thing.
It is.
You might have the best group of players of all time. I think that's interesting. Best group of players, best Lions group. I mean, I can't possibly draw a comparison to 71 or 74, though they sounded like fun. But certainly in the Lions that I've been aware of, I was thinking that 97 team squad, which was fantastic. But they had players that actually made it who were only just coming through. You know, big players like Lawrence and Richard Hill who'd only really just started playing international rugby. I think maybe that stands. This could be viewed as, on paper, as strong as they come.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, don't forget you've got a team with Gareth Edwards, 9, Barry John, 10, Mike Gibson, 12, JPR Williams, fullback, John Bevan, Gerald Davis on the wing. Willie John McBride. But look, let's be fair, every team that went abroad in any sport was either the worst team or the best team to leave these shores. Certainly this is not the worst. It's got talent. It's got a range of talents. It's got people who can play in different positions. So it looks decent, and just for the moment, I think we're going to have to leave aside the 12-man training sessions and just get into the team a little bit and see what we think of it. But at some stage, I guess, we've got to stop worrying about the preparation, but it really, really nags away at me. Now, this, one more thing, Owen. Say Steve Hansen brought the All Blacks up, and they were all unknown to each other. And they had 2 days training. They were jet lagged. They had to play on the first Saturday. The All Blacks wouldn't be any good either if that's what they had to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm. We'll talk about surprises in the squad that was announced yesterday. But overall, for me, the surprise was that they're taking 41 players. We've harped on about how 44, 45, what was Clive Woodward's?
107.
Was too many. And maybe that was because of the way he organised it rather than the sheer number. But there's going to be a lot of players sitting around on their hands who have to be managed brilliantly to keep them interested, to make the whole Lions magic work and not go rotten on them.
Absolutely, and it's a real test because, you know, in a way, some people it's bad enough when you're in the midweek team and you're clearly not in the test team. But when you're one of the 13 players who I think I've worked out will not be taking any part in the game, won't even be changed, then that's really difficult. And what you don't want, this is a great adventure, but let's go on to the good bits about the 41 in a minute, but I can see people coming back saying this was meant to be my great adventure, but I started one game and I came on in two others. You know, that's the maximum that some people are going to play. But I do think that there are pros and cons, but you just hope that all these young lads get a chance to shine. Mm.
That thing about coming back from a Lions tour and, as you say, saying this was supposed to be my great adventure. I've been leafing through a book that you contributed to, the Lions Oral History.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lovely, lovely read, and it's sequences of players through every single tour talking about what they remember about it, how they felt about it, the crucial moments, turning points, the characters. It's very, very easy to dip in and out of, so I would recommend it to anyone. But the thing that struck me was we love the magic of the Lions, and we're all tremendously excited about 2017, the Avenger, etc. But it was a number of tours where people do come back going, that wasn't, you know, that wasn't quite what I was hoping for. I was pleased to get home. I remember I was reading through the 93 one, and they went from New Zealand to Fiji, and apparently Frank Cotton from the back of the plane said, why couldn't we spend 1 week in New Zealand and 20 weeks in Fiji instead? You know, it is quite often that this thing doesn't go off and isn't this great circus and wonderful event that we'd like to think of it as.
No, you're right, and that's maybe in one way a backhanded tribute to the whole thing that we keep on loving it, but. You know, let's be fair. I mean, and let's be completely frank about this. It's usually the New Zealand tour where that people hate the most. I mean, 1977, apparently it rained every day bar three. The team cheered when their plane lifted off when they left. 1993 was slightly bleak as well. So 2005, you know, was just disastrous. So, I mean, New Zealand has creature comforts. possibly not as many as South Africa and Australia.
I loved reading about Geach, and I think it must have been 77, talking about how it rained all the time and how they were just perpetually keeping their playing shirts on the radiators in their hotel rooms to get them dry for the next game.
Yeah,
I mean, talk about another era. But
I toured in the era when my hotel room bathroom was outside. You know, you had to sort of go out into an outside corridor to go to the loo. So, you know, at that time it was difficult.
The hardships.
But the key moment in this and how you view it is as soon as they pick the team for the first test match, when that happens, the team, however close they are, and they may well remain close, when that happens, it divides into two. And that's when people start thinking, blimey, this was going to be the trip of my life, but I'm not getting a go.
Mm-hmm. So let's just look at that 41 closely. We'll go through sort of surprises. Most surprising inclusion, Steve. I've got three down in front of me. Mm. I was surprised about Jarrod Payne because if you've got Elliot Daly, who's as versatile, I wasn't sure about that. But yeah. I think he might be one of the players that really rises through this one. I don't really see why you have Ross Moriarty. I don't doubt his talent in the slightest. I don't want to say the one you're going to say, but the other person I wasn't quite sure about that surprised me was Jack Noel as well, who I have huge admiration for, and I think he'd be a great guy to have on that tour. So maybe that's it. But I can't quite see a game fitting around his talents in such a short time to really make him give him the opportunity to make a massive dent on the All Blacks.
True. That's Noel first. I mean, what I love about it that there's the son of a Cornish fisherman on a line. To her. Not one of the great public schools, not from Oxbridge or anything like that. That's why I love it that Carl Sinclair's in it. I think those two are just marvellous to have those guys in it. Jarrod Payne, I kind of, one of those ones where you're shocked and then actually you sit and think about it and you're not quite as shocked because he does have ability and I think he's been held back by injury. I'm Moriarty's had a tremendous season, still quite not sure about that, but I think there's too many Irish flankers. I think that Sean O'Brien and Stan, CJ Stander are both outstanding players. I think they're very vigorous. I think they're slightly much of a muchness, even though one plays more open side, one blind side. And O'Brien didn't come off on the last lines tour, and I think both of them, they missed the chance to put Itoje as a blindside flanker and
O'Brien didn't come off on the last tour.
Sorry,
you say O'Brien didn't come off as in didn't shine.
No, I don't think he did.
Not in that third test. I wasn't there, but I thought that was.
Well, he played okay. I just don't think he's. You know, I think neither of them are real footballers, and I think you've got enough big donkeys in any Lions team. You need some footballers. I'm not saying either of them are going to let Lions down. Moriarty is not a massive guy, but blimey, he does make up for it in sheer intensity. So, you know, I don't think we're not talking about a ghastly error here, but it's just one or two I thought were wrong. And I would like to see Marrow play blindside because it gives them a chance to bulk up the team in the second row.
Yeah, the thing about Stander, tell me if you disagree with this, but so he brings great ball carrying heft. But his hands aren't great. He's a bit of a tank. He does one thing really 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 well, doesn't he?
He does. But
so if you're going to play it, if you want to play a big ball carrier at six, does that not mean that maybe that's what you could do with Toby Faletau and get someone who can carry well but also has athleticism, hands and footballing brain at the same time?
I don't agree with that.
He's not quite a tank like Stander, but
he's not. But also I think that when you've got two great players for a position, you shouldn't just shunt one somewhere else because you don't know who to pick between the two. I mean, I think Toby, I think he'll have a great tour. I think it's by no means nailed on that that Billy Vunipola, who I rate fantastic, will be the number eight. But just going back to Stander, he's a powerful, not a massive guy, but a very powerful straight runner. Now, the All Blacks have seen a few powerful straight runners in their time and will not be in the least bothered about the prospect.
This is a reasonable point. Yeah. I, one thing that worried me yesterday on the news front that was discussed was, obviously we know we're going to lose, the Lions will lose players to injury, etc. But there's already a question mark over Connor Murray and Alan Wynne-Jones. And for me, if you had to think of two players that you really, really, really would not want to lose, that they would be sort of in my top 10, I think, at this stage.
They may well be. I mean, they may well be. Murray, because he's such a great player and has beaten the All Blacks. Wynne-Jones, because at his best, he could be the core forward, as he was in 2013. I guess the only thing is, though, in you know, at this time of the season, any list of 41 players you care to mention, even 41 who are not in the team, name another, they're always going to be two or three who've got injury doubts, yeah. You know. Actually, in some ways, some of it's less bad than we thought, you know. And a lot of the party have been out injured and come back, which is good because they've been rested. But no, those two, you'd be praying for them. I mean, I did think... thought Graham Rowntree yesterday said that Alan Wynne-Jones is training, so they were pretty bullish about that. But, you know, Murray is one of these mystery injuries where we hear a little bit and then you wouldn't be at all surprised to learn it was something else. Let's hope to goodness not.
Steve, who were you most surprised they omitted, or rather, who would you have had in who they didn't?
It's a good question, that, because I'm happy with the team, really. I'm happy with the team. The three or four people I'm not happy with, I can sort of see why those people were brought in, and at least he's true to the idea, as he said yesterday, this is going to be a brutal, upfront, in-your-face test series. No, we don't have any passengers, don't have any small blokes in it, kind of thing, apart from Stuart Hogg. So I'm quite happy. I'm not going to pick holes in it and say he should have been in. You know, Tipperick possibly has never been in one of my teams, but I can see why he's in, because he's got that extra bit. I would have liked to see Jamie Robertson. I mean, everyone said he would be. I think that they've got a problem at 12, as most sides have, which I think Jamie Roberts would have filled better than Robbie Henshaw.
The thing about the 12, I think we'll be talking about this a lot for the next couple of months, which is sort of why that the player that I would have liked them to have brought, and again, I don't have a problem with this, I can understand completely why, it's just bloody obvious why he's not in, but I would have liked George Ford to have been there, and the reason is simple. They haven't got a real wealth of classy players at 12. So I would really like to see Owen Farrell at 12. The trouble with that is, as we all know, there's very, very little time to bed in anything. So if they want that, which I hope they will do, then he's going to be training every bloody minute that he can do with Johnny Sexton. But we know that Johnny Sexton's not going to last the course, or you have to plan for the fact that he won't last the course. And then do you suddenly then bring in Dan Bigger as your 10 and start from scratch? That's where I think that this plan might come apart, because that's a really hard one to stitch together, because Dan Bigger is such a different type of player to Sexton and Ford. So if you had George Ford in there, then you could bring him in and you've got something ready-made that he knows works. And we know what George Ford's weakness is, and that's why he wasn't selected. But that's why I think he would have been good, because as you say, 12's we're short on the ground with 12. And if it's not Owen, then I don't really know who it is.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'd look at it another way. I mean, I saw Worcester play Bath on the weekend, and, you know, George was just brushed aside. So you talk about Johnny Sexton might not last the course, but, if they'd taken George, maybe he wouldn't either. I'd look at it another way and say, look, who do you want as 12? Ben Teoh and Robbie Henshaw have been put forward. Robbie Henshaw, to me, is not an inventive 12. He's not a kicking 12. He's a straight running 12. Okay, not one dimensional, but be slightly disappointing for me this last Six Nations. Ben Teoh shows things in flashes. I mean, he complains about only coming on in the last 10 minutes of a game, but actually, when he comes on, his interventions are quite fitful. So I would just start now. Fly half for me is between Sexton and Bigger, and Owen Farrell is 12. He's a monumental player there. He's got another kicking game, and he doesn't take any prisoners. So, but as you say, you know, once you start experimenting, you think, well, right, what's our next experiment? Oh, whoops, the first test match is tomorrow.
Steve, what were you going to say about Scotland? It was clear there weren't going to be many Scots. There were only two. I thought he'd put three in. I thought it was quite ballsy to stick with just two. Of course, there's a lot of there's the predictable outrage north of the border. Jim Telfer, Scottish rugby should really feel as if they've been badly let down. Maybe, but when you go through it one by one, there's not one particular him v him where you think, oh, the Scottish guy was hard done by. It's just the way it is.
I have to say, hand on heart, I may have had two Scots, but probably neither of the ones that are in there. for various reasons. But look, this is difficult. It is one thing, rugby fans on all forms of media and in the street, in the bars, on Twitter, expressing their real disappointment. What is completely wrong is for experienced people like Telfer and Ian McLaughlin, who apparently seems to be accusing Warren of almost having a problem with Scots, not understanding them, which is absolutely ridiculous. He must understand them because he's never lost them as coach of Wales. I just think it takes me back to that horrific time when Brian O'Driscoll was quite rightly dropped last time. You don't mind Irish people who were just completely blinded by the icon nature of Brian. Couldn't even work out he'd declined quite a lot by that time. But when you get sort of Keith Wood and Willie John McBride weighing in, and when you get this hint, look, I'm not going to bother with the Lions anymore, I'm going to follow my own team. That is terrible. It's not the Lions spirit, and people should grow up. The team, I can tell you, 100% was honestly selected, and that's after speaking to every selector.
I agree with that completely. But the thing that I went away wondering, and this is again not to suggest bias, because I don't believe there was the remotest question of anyone's integrity in the way it was selected, is there was no Scot in the room who says, listen, you're slightly misjudging this guy. You don't know quite what a personality is or quite how hard he is in the tackle. I see him day by day. I mean, there are players in this squad who got in because one of the coaches said, I just think we can't go without him. Like Warren Gatland insists on bringing Jonathan Joseph, who wasn't in. I don't know for sure, but I know that Andy Farrell's a massive Jared Payne fan, so he would have been pushing his cause. That doesn't make him biased. It's just his opinion. There was no Scottish opinion in the room.
I agree. I mean, they were offered a seat there and turned it down. But I think.
Well, they offered a seat. They were, as a selector, I know they're offered two Scots are offered to be coaches.
Yeah, well, okay, but that would have been a voice. If you're a coach, if you come in and you're one of the senior coaches, you get a say on selection because
exactly, and they said no.
They said no. I mean, when they said no, possibly, almost as a PR gesture, Warren could have found someone in or around the squad to come along. But that's kind of tokenism. I think it's unfortunate no one was in there to put their case. And as you say, to tell the committee something they didn't know about a player.
I'd have liked Vern Cotter in there, actually, because he's sort of officially impartial now.
Totally.
But he's just brimful of the information that might have just turned it one way or the other.
And he's a no-bullshit Kiwi. Vern Cotter would have been absolutely ideal. But I feel sorry for Scotland. I love Scottish rugby. I've got loads of my family up there, big Glasgow supporters. And then people come up and say, well, of course, Wales got more than Scotland, but Scotland beat Wales. Well, if you want to do it on that way, you say, well, look what Saracens did to Glasgow and look what England did to Scotland. So, you know, you've got to be careful going down there. I can't think of anyone who's close from, apart from the guys who went in. I think Richie Gray would have been next, but two or second row, one of the back rows fairly close, but I really, really can't think of anyone else.
But what is this? Does this undermine the Lions thing? The four countries in one union. You will know that Scottish rugby fans at this stage say, oh, I'm just losing faith with this thing. I'm not really a part of it anymore. And no one wants that. But that is just an unfortunate byproduct of a sequence of tours where they are so poorly represented.
The Lions' status and the Lions' glories were created by people like Andy Irvine and Jim Telfer,
Gavin Hastings,
Scott Hastings,
great Gregor Townsend, you know, 97.
Going back till they started, there was Scots on every trip. They have helped create the legend that is the Lions and the brand that's the Lions. So just to turn away if you haven't got a people in is wrong. Mm. And there would have been, you know, it's poor, it's bad for the Lions when one country is so badly represented, but nothing like as bad as if you start sticking a couple of people, of token people in, just so everybody feels comfortable.
Persuaded at all that they can win this series?
I'm sorry. I've seen too many. It's brutal down there, on and off the field. I am struggling. I would love to say, yeah, of course they're going to win a test series. They're going to win one test. It'd be nice if they did, but I will remain to be convinced that that they can do that. I mean, I think the first test is massive because the All Blacks would be slightly undercooked. The All Blacks not as great as they think they are. Otherwise, it wouldn't be anyone going down there. I'm struggling still. However much I struggle, I can't see them winning a test match.
The problem with the undercooked All Blacks is they've got a test match against Tonga the week before. So they've actually had a proper run out.
Well, they have a preparation.
When England toured New Zealand in 2014, that first test, England had a pulled together side, but it was the first time the Blacks had played together for 6 months or whatever. That was their opportunity. Even that's been partially taken away.
Well, going back donkeys just now, one of the worst England teams to tour was 1985. Sorry, Stuart Barnes was the outside half. But they were really awful. But they almost won the first test because the All Blacks were undercooked. But these days, there's only one team in world rugby, anywhere in world rugby, that is undercooked when it comes to the test series, and that's the Lions.
Today, Eddie Jones announced his 31-man squad to tour Argentina. I went along expecting the next generation or the next tier of players to be named, the likes of Ben Spencer, Dan Robson at scrum half, for instance, Marlon Yard, Samessa Rokodaguni on the wings, Mike Haley, the hailed, admired Sale fullback, Josh Beaumont, who we've been told for a long time is coming through as a lock forward. Eddie did something really unexpected and interesting today. He basically said, listen, that lot, they're not coming with me this time. I'm going to go with my senior players, the England players who didn't make the Lions squad, and then I'm going to go drop down another level and go to the ones still coming through because I want to see if any of them are going to make it. I can see what he's saying, but it was a bizarre logic. Either that or actually the aforementioned players, he doesn't really rate. What did you think of that squad today, Steve?
Odd and bizarre, and I couldn't follow the logic. Look, the one thing I've always thought is when you've got a test team going abroad, with Lions also touring, people harp up and say, oh, right, we've got to give youth a chance. Well, when are the people who were sort of first reserve for England, the older guys, when are they going to get a chance? They've got to have one. And look, and that's what I would have done. I would have picked my second team in every position. I would have picked the strongest people I had, and I would have left development to the under-20s and the clubs, etc. But, I mean, as you say, it's got this sort of gulf there. It's either the old codgers who are not quite making at the moment, or people we've barely heard of. So that's bizarre. That's bizarre. And people like Josh Beaumont and Haley and these guys, it's the ideal situation, surely, to get to know them better.
Yeah. So rather than say Tamana Harrison at flanker, who's not on the sheet in the slightest, or Matt Kovacic, who we know he's sort of never been on Eddie Jones's wish list. You've got Ben and Tom Curry, two Sale Sharks flankers, twins, who were playing in the under-20s just recently in the under-26 Nations. They're 18 years old.
I just don't get that because they've got development to do. They're taking up the place of someone who is further along the track and has deserved to be there. I just do not get that at all, Owen. I don't get it. I mean, you've got the under-20s to come. I've seen them both. They're both excellent players, but that is just ridiculous, and it's putting the chicken before the egg, the cart before the horse, and all those and metaphors you can think of.
The statement of a sorter on the wing, he's picked two uncapped wings, both who have been great at under-20s level. Nathan Earl in 2014 was outstanding under-20s, Saracens winger, and another player who was on the current under-20s team in the Six Nations, Joe Coconasiga, a London Irish. Those are both big players. They're your big ball-carrying type wingers. Christian Wade doesn't get on the plane. that's something of a statement. And Joe Coconasiga, again, is he old enough? Is he ready enough? He plays for London Irish, so he's not only been playing under 20s, but he's been playing championship rugby as well.
He's not even played any decent Aviva Premiership. I just don't get that. You know, it's almost like he's got put two team sheets out and they somehow be combined to one that the under 20s. I mean, I think the under 20s is an overdone concept. I think to have the World Cup every year is ridiculous. Should have it every 4 years. But I really think that he's got the best of, you know, what he's good at is forming a line of succession. But now you've got the sort of first, second in line, third in line, and the 29th in line. It doesn't make any sense. And you mentioned Christian Wade. Should we talk about Christian Wade? Because he appears to be, that appears to be with him and Danny, the final rejection. If you're not in this team, when are you ever going to get in?
Well, you wonder if when he said that Denny was in the team, it was his Australian accent and he meant Danny Cipriani instead of Denny Solomona. No Cipriani, no Wade. I don't think you're sticking your neck out to say in the Eddie Jones era of England that those two have no future.
No, I think you must say that now. I'd be devastated if I was both of them. And just watching Christian Wade lately, you just think, wow, you know, what an unbelievable. He's getting better and better, quicker and quicker.
He is.
He's such a great finisher now. And Danny, I'm on record of really, really rating and really like the way he plays. And I tell you what's sad, Owen, if genuinely they can get a place in the England second, third and fourth team, it just says something terrible about rugby because, you know, it's meant to be an entertainment. I'd rather watch Christian Wade almost than any Lion wing that's been selected. Danny can take the ball to the line and put people through beautifully. And I just think it's really, really, it's a sporting tragedy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. Go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Okay, and finally, we move on to European rugby. There's a massive weekend of European rugby. Saracens didn't need to pick a squad. They've had a brilliant one for bloody ages. And they go to Munster in the semi-finals of the Champions Cup. Leinster travel away to Clermont in Lyon. I should sort of make the point, Saracens are not going to Munster, they're going to Dublin. That game's been played at the Aviva. In the Challenge Cup, Gloucester and Bath are both away in France against respectively La Rochelle and Stade Francais. Big weekend. You sort of got to clear the mind of Lions, England, permutations, who's in, who's out, and who's actually going to survive it through to the final weekend in Murrayfield in 2 weeks' time. Saracens Munster, that's the pick of the weekend games, isn't it? I mean, they're all great games, but they're massive game.
Definitely. I tell you, you won't be able to quite get the lines out of your mind, because every time there's a collision, you'll be hoping they all get up. But, I mean, Munster Saracens is almost like a classic European semi-final. It's what a semi-final should be, as is the other one. I think, technically, the best two teams in the last four would be Saracens and Clermont, but technically, technical matters often don't mean a lot when you get to this stage in the semi-final. I think Munster Saracens would be fantastic. I'm rather surprised if Saracens are upset by the occasion and all that. They've all been in big occasions. But I think Munster clearly would play well. Their Lions will want to celebrate. And what a fantastic prospect it is.
Clermont Leinster?
I think some people got a soft spot for Clermont. I'm one of them. They've been the runner-up so many times, so many competitions. They're a great club. If ever you wanted to, you had to choose a place to watch rugby every week, you'd probably go Clermont, because it's a great
stadium.
Magnificent
there. Absolutely wonderful.
Fantastic. Leinster also, though, deadly dangerous. You know, I mean, I think if Leinster can get ahead with 20 minutes to go, or can be ahead with 20 minutes to go, the old Clermont heebie-jeebies might then kick in. So, four great games. Don't tell me that those two are inferior in pace and quality and passion to an internationals, because they're not. They're right up there.
This has been a special edition of the Ruck Thursday special for Lions and England squads being announced. This was the Ruck. You can put your comments on our website, or you can subscribe. Please join the conversation. Please come back to us again next week. We'll be up at the normal time from next week onwards. Thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.